The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Does your dad love to grill but hates the hassle and poor quality at the grocery store? We have the perfect Father's Day gift, Omaha Steaks. This Father's Day, for only $49.99, you can get a limited-time Father's Day package when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter FTN in the search bar to apply the savings. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving a limited-time offer to our listeners for Father's Day. This is really an amazing deal. You will get 80% off Omaha Steaks' Father's Day package, which includes 2 tender, mild filet mignons, 2 bold, beefy top sirloins, 4 crispy chicken fried steaks, 4 juicy boneless pork chops, 4 all-beef Omaha Steak burgers, 4 award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, 12 ounces of all-beef meatballs, 1 pound of steakhouse fries, 4 made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets, 1 Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus get 4 additional burgers for free. This offer ends soon. Go to omahasteaks.com, type FTN in the search bar, grab your dad, and fire up the grill.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. The president returning home from his first foreign trip.
And a White House staff shakeup could be in store.
Plus, after the Manchester attack,
Secretary of State Tillerson promises the British no more intelligence leaks.
Obviously, regret that that happened.
Later, we introduce you to StoryCorps on this Memorial Day weekend, saluting Americans at war.
I still have the nightmares. Never got over the nightmares.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. As we often do, let's get started this weekend with CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy, who's in sunny Sicily. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, Steve.
This weekend marks the end of President Trump's first foreign trip as commander-in-chief, Stephen. What have we learned about his foreign policy?
Well, we've gotten a sense of what exactly Mr. Trump means by America first. President Trump began this trip in Saudi Arabia. He got the Saudis to agree to $110 billion worth of arms purchases. The president says it'll mean jobs, jobs, jobs for U.S. defense contractors. It's a deal that the Obama administration stalled because the previous administration was concerned that the Saudis were slaughtering civilians in Yemen, going after the Houthi rebels there. Well, President Trump is happy to sign that deal. He's also happy to secure an agreement from the Gulf Cooperation Council, a group of Arab nations, to crack down on terror financing. So those were some big wins for the president, as he sees them, in the early part of his trip. Then he went off to Rome, had a meeting with Pope Francis. That seemed to go relatively well. And then he flew to Brussels for the NATO summit, and then here to Italy for the G7 to really have some very difficult talks with the allies. And that's where I think the trip has gotten a bit sticky. I mean, there have been some awkward exchanges between the president and his counterparts, and certainly some awkward photo ops.
Now, when the president gets back to work at the White House, there may be some staffing changes. Tell us about that.
Clearly, Steve, the White House and the president have not been happy with the way that the last several weeks have been going. What we're expecting is some kind of a change in the communications apparatus of the White House. We were told those changes would wait until after Mr. Trump got back from this first foreign trip. But some kind of change is likely to occur, maybe the standing up of some kind of outside group that would help the president and his allies take questions about whatever comes next.
Stephen, what's the significance of the FBI now scrutinizing the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner?
What we at CBS News have learned is that the FBI is very interested to talk to Jared Kushner about the meetings he had in December after the election with not only the Russian ambassador, but at Sergei Kislyak's behest, with a top Russian banker, the head of a VEB bank, which is a financial institution owned by the Russian government and subject to U.S. sanctions. Kushner's attorney says that he would be happy to discuss all of these things with the Senate Intelligence Committee and any other congressional inquiry. And if there is another inquiry, perhaps within the Justice Department or the FBI, that Mr. Kushner is happy to share his information about those meetings with them, too. There's been no official comment from the White House. It's all coming from Kushner's private attorney, Jamie Gorelick.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy on the Weekend Roundup from Sicily. Thanks, Stephen.
You bet, Steve.
The White House also dealing with another setback on its revised travel ban. A federal appeals court sided with a lower court Thursday, blocking the executive order. More from correspondent Jeff Pagase.
The president's executive order would have temporarily suspended visas from Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. The decision from the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals keeps it from going into effect. Writing for the majority, Chief Judge Roger Gregory wrote, "Mr. Trump's order speaks with vague words of national security, but in context drips with religious intolerance, animus, and discrimination." The travel ban was a cornerstone of President Trump's campaign.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
Shortly after taking office, the president signed a first executive order that was also blocked by the courts. This version, which dropped any overt references to religion, was supposed to stand up to judicial scrutiny. The administration has said the threat of terrorism justifies the ban. The dissenting judges agreed. The real losers in this case are the millions of individual Americans whose security is threatened on a daily basis by those who seek to do us harm.
The White House is still awaiting another ruling by a separate court. The measure may end up at the Supreme Court. Republicans are celebrating in Montana this weekend. Voters there elected Greg Gianforte to serve as the state's lone congressman, replacing Ryan Zinke, who's now Secretary of the Department of Interior. But opponents say Gianforte fought his way to victory. Here's correspondent Barry Peterson.
I should not have responded in the way that I did. And for that, I'm sorry.
And you're forgiven.
A victorious Greg Gianforte apologized directly to the reporter who accused Gianforte of body slamming him.
I should not have treated that reporter that way. And for that, I'm sorry, Mr. Ben Jacobs.
On Wednesday, the Guardian newspaper released an audio recording of the confrontation after Jacobs asked Gianforte his stance on the House health care legislation. Gianforte was later charged with misdemeanor assault.
Speak right with now. Shane, please.
But you don't.
You guys, the last Jesus time they came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the Guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
You, the last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
That's not the person that I am, and it's not the way I'll lead in this state.
House Speaker Paul Ryan was among the Republicans urging Gianforte to apologize.
Should the gentleman apologize? Yeah, I think he should apologize.
Republicans poured millions into this race. President Trump even put out a robocall.
He's a wonderful guy. He knows how to win. He's going to win for you.
Gianforte's supporters appeared to take his apology at face value.
You think this puts it behind him?
I honestly do. I think this is part of life.
Republican leaders say Gianforte's victory is a vindication for the White House.
Do you see this as a vote not just for the Montanan, but for the president?
Yes, I do.
Why?
Because they want his policies to succeed.
The U.S. and U.K. have patched up their intelligence-sharing channels after the Brits broke it off. After repeated American leaks of information from the British investigation into Monday's suicide bomb attack in Manchester, England, that killed 22 people.
Secretary of State Tillerson came to London to smooth diplomatic feathers ruffled over U.S. leaks from the investigation into the Manchester terrorist attack. Tillerson apologizes for the leaks and says it won't happen again.
We take full responsibility for that. We obviously regret that that happened.
Tillerson also says he's here to show American solidarity.
All across America, hearts are broken.
The suicide bomber killed 22 people, the youngest 8 years old. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Still to come on the Weekend Roundup, more from Manchester as heroes speak out.
Blood was coming out.
She was choking on the blood.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. One couple suddenly became heroes during the Manchester attack. Kim and Phil Dick were waiting for their own daughter when the bomb exploded. They talk with Scott Pelley.
Oh my God.
All of a sudden, an almighty flash and bang. It was deafening, wasn't it? Our ears just went. We got thrown on the floor, and then there was rubble and dust everywhere.
It was thick, acrid smoke.
Yeah.
And ash was falling, almost like snow.
Yeah.
we thought we were just on the periphery of a much bigger explosion. That's what our first thoughts were.
So I'm shot, and I just went, my babies are in there. And then out of the dust and the rubble, and the little girl is staggering towards me with all her hair, long blonde hair, all burnt, all her face coming out of her mouth, big gash on her shoulder pouring.
Kim half carried and we half dragged her to the foyer doors. And initially laid her down, but
blood was coming out.
She was choking on the blood.
What did you see, Phil?
Horror. Absolute horror. Injured people.
Body parts.
Dead people. Parts of people. Blood. So much blood. Literally puddles of blood mixed with ash. The only thing I saw was the remnants of the suicide bomber. Basically the bottom half of a body in the middle of the corridor.
And then my phone was ringing. It was there and I'd reached out with one hand and I saw it was Tammy, my daughter Tamla. And I was the relief. Anyway, I'm holding the phone and I'm going, Tamla, Tamla, you're okay, darling. She's going, yeah, Mum. I'm going, where's Sasha? She said, she's with me.
Where are you?
Come on.
The staff were brilliant in the arena. They kept coming up and saying, it's okay, we're going to get help.
Yeah. 3-4 police officers, we got one of the trestle tables that had been used for merchandising and we gently shuffled her across onto the trestle table. Mm. And with the police officers, we carried her down on this makeshift stretcher.
Did her dad call you?
He called me.
Yeah.
He called me. Eventually he got through.
Yeah.
We managed to liaise and get him through and in and reunited with his daughter.
Kim, you haven't had a chance to process this, have you?
No. I can't get to sleep at night, but as soon as I wake up, it's just there, the carnage, because the whole hour that we were sat there, all I could see was either dead bodies, body parts, blood, and
injured people,
and hearing them crying out.
Whatever the terrorists do, every hurt just makes us stronger. That's what it does.
Kim and Phil Dick speaking with CBS's Scott Pelley in Manchester. Mexican authorities have captured 2 escaped convicts from a Virginia prison.
According to the U.S. Justice Department, the 2 men were serving time for operating a black market cigarette smuggling ring in the Carolinas. They escaped from prison in Virginia and were caught in the Mexican capital in a joint U.S.-Mexican operation. The illegal business was worth about $20 million, according to Justice Department records. Mexico is expected to return the convicts to the U.S. Adrian Bard, CBS News, Mexico City.
A new report says your safety on the road and your life could depend on what you're driving. Here's correspondent Anna Warner.
Mini and small cars top the list of vehicles with the highest number of driver deaths.
In terms of safety, I don't see any pro to having a small car.
The Hyundai Accent sedan and the Kia Rio sedan, both mini cars, had the highest rate of deaths. In a statement, Hyundai said that safety is their number one priority, and they're very confident that the Accent performs safely. CBS News reached out to Kia but did not immediately hear back.
We've always seen higher death rates in smaller cars. It's consistent.
Chuck Farmer is the lead researcher on the study.
I don't see any benefit from a safety standpoint to having a smaller car.
Only 2 large vehicles, the Dodge Challenger and the Nissan Titan Crew Cab, made the top 10 for highest rates of driver deaths. Dodge did not respond to a request for comment. Nissan said in a statement it is committed to the safety and security of our customers and their passengers and will evaluate the data in this report to identify improvement opportunities. For the study, the IIHS looked at 2014 model cars or earlier equivalent models. Of the models with the lowest rates of driver deaths per year, more than half were midsize or larger. 11 vehicles, including the Mazda CX-9 and the Jeep Cherokee, had 0 driver deaths between 2012 and 2015.
A new study from the American Heart Association finds getting less than 6 hours of sleep a night can more than double your risk of dying if you've got something called metabolic syndrome. CBS News medical contributor Dr. Tara Narula spoke about the study's findings with CBS this morning.
What exactly is metabolic syndrome? A lot of people don't know what it is. Yeah. So it's essentially a cluster of cardiovascular risk factors that raises your cardiovascular risk. If you have three out of these five, then you're diagnosed with metabolic syndrome. And those things are elevated or enlarged waist circumference, a low HDL, high triglycerides, high blood pressure, and high fasting blood sugar. 30 to 40% of the American population has metabolic syndrome. In this study, about 39%, so very common.
So what's the connection between the people that have it and sleep?
Well, as Nora pointed out, in this study, they found that people got less than 6 hours. We're not only at increased risk of dying of cardiovascular disease, but we're at increased risk of dying of mortality, just all causes of mortality. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of hypotheses as to why this might be. Yeah. We know that lack of sleep can change brain areas like the hypothalamus and hormone secretion to potentially increase appetite, can turn on your sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight, which could raise your blood pressure. It can change hormone secretion like growth hormone and cortisol, your stress hormone, that could cause imbalances in your glucose metabolism and regulation. So there are mechanisms
this
by
all
which
comes from whether you get X number of hours of sleep.
Exactly. That's the thinking. And obviously, the recommendation is about 7 to 8 hours a night. So the mean average in this study was about 6 hours.
The study broke new ground on measuring sleep, right?
It did. So for most work in this area, they ask people, how much did you sleep? So it's self-reported. But in this study, they put them in a lab, and they basically measured how much sleep they were getting in the laboratory research setting. So it's a little bit more accurate. Obviously, it was only one night, so, you know, we can't draw, you know, a lot out of this one study, but...
But they're sleeping in their sleep. I mean, how do you measure what's really good sleep and what sleep is not that...
Well, one of the interesting things about this study that they also did differently is that they kind of factored out what we call sleep disordered breathing or things like obstructive sleep apnea, because we know that that raises cardiovascular risk. And so in most sleep studies, we don't really know, was it the sleep apnea or was it the sleep time? But in this study, they kind of took that out of the equation, really focused on just the duration of sleep.
And for the nappers of the world, does it matter?
Hello, my name is Charlie Rose.
Does it simply mean the number of total hours you get in a 24-hour period?
Not necessarily
how much you get at one sleep.
It means the consistent number at night. The napping is not really included in that.
Up next.
My name is Bob.
Remembering Roger Moore.
James Bob.
On the Weekend Roundup. The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
If you're familiar with cloud computing, you probably know that Amazon Web Services offers a complete set of secure compute, storage, application, and deployment services that help companies launch and scale their IT infrastructures while lowering costs. But did you know that you're still responsible for protecting your own AWS-based assets, meaning your applications and data, from advanced cyber threats? Protect your AWS with Barracuda Networks Advanced Firewall Solutions. Visit AWS Marketplace or barracuda.com/AWS to learn more.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A new report reveals more about the link between alcohol and breast cancer in women. Here's Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. John Lapook.
The report reviewed data on more than 12 million women from dozens of studies around the world and found that just one small glass of wine, beer, or other alcohol daily was associated with an increased risk of breast cancer. For premenopausal women, the risk increased 5%. For postmenopausal women, it increased 9%. Dr. Ann McTiernan of the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center is one of the authors.
The risk of breast cancer does increase with more alcohol, so that two drinks a day can give you twice the risk of one drink a day, or three drinks a day increases the risk by three times.
On the positive side, vigorous exercise such as running, fast cycling, or spinning was associated with a 17% lower risk in premenopausal women and a 10% lower risk in postmenopausal women.
We wouldn't recommend that somebody drink four drinks a night and on a weekend and assume that the next morning if they go for a jog that that will cure everything. It may not work that way. Women who keep their weight in a normal range or are physically active, limit their alcohol to one drink a day, that can significantly reduce risk for developing breast cancer.
More people are being diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
A growing older population and more people being diagnosed earlier. The CDC's Christopher Taylor tells me that's what's causing Alzheimer's disease death rates to go up 55% from 1999.
More of those people dying with Alzheimer's disease are now dying at home. And so there's a need to make sure that people with Alzheimer's disease as well as their caregivers have the resources that they need.
Age is the greatest risk factor. Most adults with the disease are 65 or older. In fact, Alzheimer's is the fifth leading cause of death for people 65 and over. Sabrina Cupid for CBS News, Atlanta.
Alabama is offering another option to women planning to give birth.
Alabama's Governor Kay Ivey signed a bill into law which allows midwives to deliver babies. Ivey said the law gives mothers more options to choose how they deliver their babies while simultaneously ensuring that they are qualified to do so. Midwifery had been outlawed for more than 40 years. Donna Francavilla for CBS News, Birmingham.
Correspondent Kenneth Craig reports on how iPads are helping blind children.
The wings and legs of an insect are attached.
At one of the oldest schools for the blind in the U.S., nearly 300 students are learning to see the world in a whole new way. Each one has their own iPad. Even though almost all of them are visually impaired, and some, like Jessica Karim,
you can use it for lots of different things,
have no vision at all.
Technology is changing all around us, and it's kind of great to be a part of that.
She's an 11th grader at the New York Institute for Special Education.
And you have here in the 30s and 40s.
Where Dr. Bernadette Kappen showed us how students have traded in these old clunky Braille writers for tablets that can do much more.
It's an opportunity for them to be increasingly more literate and to have material at the same time as their sighted peers. You can have screen enlargement.
Title.
You can have the voiceover for the totally blind.
Jessica navigates hers with ease.
2017.
Using a Bluetooth-enabled Braille writer.
Probably the best thing, as teenagers go, is you get to do your homework on the bus.
And that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
10th grader Kevin Figueroa is legally blind in one eye and can only see shadows and light with the other. But his lifelong dream is to make movies, and with his tablet, it's quickly coming into focus.
I love it. I try and get every opportunity I can to go outside and, like, shoot something.
Teachers and students here say thanks to this small gadget,
very good,
the possibilities are now endless.
One more time.
Kenneth Craig, CBS News, Bronx, New York.
One of the few men to hold the role of 007, Roger Moore, died Tuesday at age 89. CBS's Deborah Rodriguez takes a look at the legacy he left behind.
Nobody does it better.
Contrary to the theme of The Spy Who Loved Me, Roger Moore may not be the best James Bond to ever appear on screen. A 2014 CBS News poll only ranked him third among all the 007s. True, he was suave and seductive.
Oh, James, I cannot find the words.
Well, let me try and enlarge your vocabulary.
And the actor holds the current record for playing the role, 7 movies.
You are very suspicious, Mr. Bond.
Oh, I find I live much longer that way.
Critics noted that Moore brought humor to Bond's character, which is not surprising for someone who once described his acting range as somewhere between raising left eyebrow and raising right eyebrow.
Baby, you're the best.
Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
We want to introduce you now to some of the work done by StoryCorps. The project's work to share the stories of everyday people over the last 15 years, all archived at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. For Memorial Day, StoryCorps combed its archive to remember those who've died at war. Now, we're sharing some of those stories to honor them with dignity. Let's start with Frank Curry, a World War II vet who survived the attack on Pearl Harbor.
When I got out of high school, I went looking for a job, couldn't find it. So I told Mama, I'm joining the Navy, and you have to sign the papers because I'm only 17. I said, if you don't sign the papers for me, Mama, I'll go downtown and get a hobo to sign them. Finally convinced her, and I went aboard the battleship in August. We headed for Pearl Harbor. I'd never even heard of it. I didn't even know what it was. The day of the attacks, I was mess cooking. We hear this big blast. Instantaneously, another blast. And we come up our topside. I saw the first god-awful sight I witnessed that day. That's when the bomb come down that hit the Arizona. That ship come 12 to 15 foot in the air, broke in two, and settled back down. If you'd have had a bag of popcorn, and you'd have went out here in a breeze and threw it up in the air, That was bodies that went out all over that harbor. All those that could started picking them up as soon as they could. We gonna get in the barges, help them go pick bodies up out of the water. One of them come up. He approached a young man in the water. And as he approached him, the young man severely burned and everything. He said, "Do not touch me." He said, "I got to touch you. I got to get you medical help." And when he reached out to help the boy in, what he grabbed a hold of come right off in his hand, just like that boy had been cooked on a stove. I still have the nightmares, never got over the nightmares. And with God as my witness, I read my paper this morning, and right now, I can't tell you what I read. I can't remember it. But what happened on that day is tattooed on your soul. There's no way I can forget that. I wish to God I could.
We'll have more from StoryCorps when we return on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. We're sharing some work from StoryCorps this weekend as the country marks Memorial Day. Retired First Lieutenant Barry Romo had a unique relationship with his nephew, Private First Class Robert Bobby Romo. You see, the two served together in the Army in Vietnam, but only one made it home.
Bobby was 1 month younger than me, and we were raised like brothers. I enlisted in the Army to go to Vietnam. That was my intention. And he didn't want to go in the military, but he got drafted anyway. They sent him to Vietnam, and he ended up being in my brigade. I became a lieutenant, and he begged me to help him get out of the field, but I couldn't help him. And my nephew got me out of Vietnam. One day, I got back from a patrol. They told me, "Your nephew, Robert, has been killed." He was running to save a friend of his who had been wounded in battle, and he was shot in the throat. Enemy fire was too intense, so they couldn't retrieve the body, and he was in the sun for 48 hours. A staff sergeant said, "Why don't we seal the body permanently? That way your family, they remember him as he looked like when he graduated from high school." I was then sent to escort the body home. I had white gloves on and a uniform with my medals, but I felt dirty. You know, I thought I was going to die in Vietnam, but I didn't have to go back there. I had my ticket punched by my nephew's blood. And I felt that I failed him, I failed my family. And I still feel guilty to this day.
Bobby was killed in 1968. Now on to another unique relationship between Max and Kim Voltz, a husband and wife who served together in Iraq. They were also in the same elite bomb disposal unit there. But one night in 2003, Max called in the location of an explosive. Kim responded, but didn't survive that mission.
We deployed in 2003. We were in the same unit. And she ripped bombs apart by hand in Iraq, just like I did. There was no being scared, no doubt, no, I might die. We never talked about that. But she died on a incident that I sent her on. That night, she was at a different base, and I tried to talk to her on the phone before she went, just to tell her, like, an extra be careful. But she was already on her way to take care of it, so I didn't get to. Her wounds were severe. One leg was blown off, and she was in a medically induced coma when I got to the hospital. I talked to her the whole time she was in there. The nurses were telling me to talk to her because they assured me that they had seen people come out of comas before and that they remembered hearing things that people said. I mean, what are you going to tell your wife who's dying? That you love her and you don't want her to die. But I knew she was dead a long time before the doctors stopped working on her. You hold someone's hand and then it feels different. I called her parents. You know, I didn't want it to be a stranger knocking on the door in an army suit. I told them that she died in my arms 10 minutes ago. She did something that most people weren't willing to do. And I don't want people to think that because she was killed while she was working that she was bad at her job or that she died because she was a girl. She did the same job that guys who think they're tough do, and she did it just as good as I did, and I think I'm the best that there is. I got married to her when I was 25. Our plan was to retire from the Army. Now I'm 36, and I still don't have a plan. I am an Army widower. I don't think there's very many of us. And when I receive a condolence letter from a high-ranking government official that says, "Mrs. Volz, we're sorry for the loss of your husband," it just makes it seem like nobody knows we exist.
That's Max Volz remembering his wife, Kim, who was killed in Iraq in 2003. Max recorded his StoryCorps interview in Baltimore. You can hear more from StoryCorps delivered to you each week by subscribing to the StoryCorps podcast or visiting StoryCorps.org. Now to something lighter, Star Wars. Celebrating a movie milestone Thursday, more from our Steve Futterman in Hollywood.
It is one of the most successful film franchises in history. All you have to do is listen to a few seconds of its famous theme to know it is Star Wars. This week is the 40th anniversary of its release. Initially, Hollywood experts were not sure if the film would even be a success. Richard Woloski is a devoted Star Wars expert who even has a Star Wars blog called Skywalking Through Neverland.
The executives didn't really care about Star Wars. It was this little tiny movie that they just wanted to give a couple of million dollars to.
This is the famous Chinese theater on Hollywood Boulevard where movie fans from around the world show up every day. Talk to most of them, and they will tell you they know about that cultural icon known as Star Wars. We found this man from France.
It's magic. I don't know. It's like when I was a little boy, I was watching it every day.
And this man from Japan.
It's just so cool. I think it's really creative.
Some of those who have become famous because of Star Wars had their initial reservations.
It is true that I wasn't particularly keen. In fact, I wasn't keen at all to be in a low-budget sci-fi movie in the part of a robot.
Actor Anthony Daniels has played the recurring role of CP-3O.
Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
He spoke with CBS station KNX.
Against my will, I kind of sucked into it. And then became a part of it that I can't leave because I'm actually very fond of my character, C-3PO.
40 years later, it's estimated that hundreds of millions have seen at least one Star Wars film. So what is the magic formula? Pretty simple, says Debbie Montgomery. She remembers seeing her first Star Wars film in 1977.
It's basically good versus evil. It's an old story, and you're always rooting for the good guy and booing for the bad guy. It's like an old melodrama.
And what is the message of Star Wars? Again, Star Wars expert Richard Woloski.
Well, I think Princess Leia summed it up best in Rogue One. Hope. Hope. There's always hope.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you, Master.
For the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Futterman in Hollywood.
May the Force be with us all.
Coming up,
I know we're always on one road.
A soundtrack to your Memorial Day weekend on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Check out CBS Radio News podcasts. From hard news to features, there's lots available from our app. Listen to experts like John Dickerson each Sunday on Face the Nation or Scott Pelley every weeknight on the CBS Evening News. There's the World News Roundup, America's longest-running network newscast, and the Weekend Roundup, our weekend review magazine show. It's all available from CBSRadioNews.com or on our app for iOS and Android.
On the Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. This weekend, we've got Eli Lev in studio.
He's performing, just him and his guitar. Eli, tell me about what you're going to sing today.
Well, I've got two songs for you, Steve. First song is called Soliloquy, and that's kind of about life on the road and just kind of the simple things that matter most. And the second song I'm really excited about, it's a single off my upcoming album. It's called One Road. And that one kind of just reminds me that I'm on this road going somewhere, not sure where, but definitely going to get there soon. So
go ahead, give us a listen.
Sure.
Tell me I got water, and tell me I got bread, and tell me I got shelter and a place to lay my head. I've never been so far out on my own. I've never been so high, never felt so alone. Well, some days I feel like a motherless child, and some days I feel so much joy I could cry. And tell me all my family are safe and sound, and I can feel their love the whole world around. And all my friends that I hold dear, they shine on like diamonds, oh so clear. Well, some days I feel like a motherless child, and some days I feel so much joy I could cry.
A great song to take a long country drive.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. Thanks, Steve.
What got you into singing and songwriting?
So I've been doing it most of my life, but this last year I really decided to dedicate myself to the music. And it's just been kind of rocking. I'm pretty excited about this kind of upcoming album. I'm working with a fantastic producer out of Philadelphia. His name's Daniel Scott, and he's a magician. He's going to make this album just really shine. I'm really excited about it. So,
Eli, you've got one more song.
Yes, this song is entitled One Road, and it's a single off my upcoming album. And it's about kind of just how we're all on this path. We're not sure where it's going, but we're definitely on it. We're definitely going somewhere, so...
Feeling pretty good this time. I can see the leaves are smiling red into gold. The wind starts moving in. It's like I'm living in the stories of old. I can hear them poets calling out in the forest. They're wishing me well. Those bars of bygone times have gotten me on one road. I'm traveling on with two friends. I'm going around in three worlds. Have I been here before and when? I'm bringing my sharpened mind, leaving my bag behind. It's all in my heart. Beat grows in my chest, melodies on my breath, I'm ready to start. And I can hear the poets calling out in the forest, what a story they tell. Those bards of bygone times are guiding us on one road. We're traveling on with our friends. We're going around in three worlds. Have we been here before and when? Give me strange land, the songs I never heard sung before. Give me warm hands to hold me when I'm feeling unsure. One road and two friends, three one road. We're traveling on with our friends. We're going round in three words. Have we been here before and when? I know we're always on one road.
Eli Lev. Performing on the Weekend Roundup, a little homegrown talent.
Thanks so much, Steve, for having me. I really appreciate the support you're giving to local music.
Great to have you here, Eli.
Now to a different kind of sound, Audible Ink.
Ready?
Ready.
This isn't Misty Hoover's first tattoo, but it's by far her most precious. This pink ink carries a special message.
I love you, Mommy. For my little girl, Lily.
This is a sound wave tattoo.
I love you, Mommy.
Body art that talks. Artist Nate Sigurd showed us how they work. First, he turns the audio clip into a waveform like this. That image is then printed out and used as a stencil. Once the ink is applied to the skin,
you take a picture with our app, we process the tattoo, and we make it so that the app can play it back.
I love you.
Sigurd says the majority of requests he's received so far are from people hoping to preserve the memory of a loved one, like Josh Gallner.
Every morning, 100%, I start my day with it.
His plays the voice of his father, who passed away 2 years ago. It's a recording of his dad talking about his long battle with cancer.
You absolutely have to believe. And once you have that belief and that desire, you can conquer anything.
It's his best advice he gives to how to survive not only cancer but life.
Advice he now carries with him always, thanks to this Audible Ink.
You can conquer anything.
Chris Martinez, CBS News, Venice Beach, California.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, autograph requests, home remedies, whatever, to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.